This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Mary. All week long, I am sharing some of my favorite episodes from the year. Stories of people caught up in the swirl of the culture wars and other hot-button issues. Stories I think are especially important to hear as we ramp up into the 2024 election season. Today, you're going to hear from trans teenager Noah Laird and his mom, Katie. After dealing with an onslaught of anti-trans legislation in Texas, these two felt like they had no choice than to pack up and leave the state entirely.
Really, it feels like life or death, where we need to be able to run away. And that's kind of what we did, is we ran away as quickly as we could to be safe.
Over the last 2.5 years, more than 20 states have passed bills targeting trans youth, from bans on gender-affirming care to school sports participation. And gender ideology has become a favorite topic for just about every Republican candidate for president, which is why it's especially important to listen to people like Noah and Katie right now. All right, here's the show. Here's what I picture when I think about the importance of elections. I picture this scene that played out about a year ago in Austin, Texas.
The House Select Committee on Constitutional Rights and Remedies will come to order. The clerk will call the roll.
Chairman Ashby?
Here.
Vice Chair Thompson?
This is a committee meeting in the Texas State Legislature, one of those very long, sometimes dull hearings that make up the bedrock of American democracy. And there are a lot of people here to testify. Representative
Longoria. At this time, the chair lays out House Bill 25 by Representative Swanson and recognizes Representative Swanson to explain the bill.
Everyone here has got something to say about House Bill 25. It's a trans kids in sports bill. First, the representative who wants to keep trans kids from competing lays out her case.
This year, 9 states passed legislation that protected safety and opportunities for girls and women in sports, and the list is quickly growing.
When this representative is done, something pretty remarkable happens. Dozens of people get up to testify about why they think this bill is nonsense.
I thank God my child was homeschooled and shielded from the bullying and trauma that happens in most public schools to trans children. I'm here to say, let them play.
Today I come as an ally who was a former school board member, served 12 years, and a member of the athletic committee. We never had this as a problem. It's not a problem. It's not an issue.
As a faith leader, I am speaking in opposition of HB 25, especially in light of the dangerous and violent and cruel ways that faith is often weaponized against trans people. I learned so much about God from our transgender siblings.
It takes more than 8 hours to get through them all. Parents of trans kids get up. Teachers get up. At one point, a 10-year-old trans girl gets up.
Today is picture day at school. But instead, I had to come to Austin again to tell you, please do the right thing and vote no on this bill. I have listened to testimony given in support of this law, and it makes no sense. No one had any examples in Texas where trans kids like me hurt another kid playing sports, but I can tell you personally that even just trying to pass these bills has hurt real kids in Texas like me.
The reason I think about this scene when I think about elections is because of what happened next, which is nothing. House Bill 25 got signed into law 3 weeks later, as if none of the people who showed up to testify had shown up at all. listening back, that 10-year-old trans girl, Maya, she had this exchange with a lawmaker that I couldn't quite shake. She talks about how hard it is to testify, which she's done before. And then she says,
when I try to fall asleep, sometimes I imagine having to leave my best friend, friends, cousins, family, etc. because of these laws. I imagine you guys yelling and shouting at me to leave Texas because I'm trans and being myself, and that's not fair.
One of the few Democrats in the room, a representative from Houston, speaks next.
Thank you, Maya. I've heard a couple people say that about leaving Texas, and would you do me a favor? You are what makes Texas good, and I don't want you to leave, okay?
The idea that you could feel so thoroughly haunted by a bunch of politicians that you abandon your home, it seemed wild to me. But that representative, she was right. A lot of people in the room that day were feeling out of options.
The first time that it really was clear to me that we needed to be making some plans, just starting to do research, was when I got in my car after I testified in front of the House committee.
This is Katie Laird. She was at that hearing, testifying about her trans son, Noah.
And I just felt gross having walked through these hallways of people holding these horrific signs, calling me, you know, a genital mutilator, people screaming at me who had seen me on the screen as I was testifying. It just felt rotten and gross and dirty. And I was like, we have to just have a plan B because I don't want my son to ever have to experience this.
After that hearing, things got worse. Over the winter, Governor Abbott released guidance that encouraged Child Protective Services to investigate trans kids and their families. And after that, doctors who'd been caring for Katie's son said they couldn't treat him anymore. That's when Katie's plan to leave began to take shape. She visited Vermont, considered California, but then she went to Colorado.
Ultimately, I visited Colorado, and it was just that experience of a very visible, you know, trans and LGBTQ plus community, the pride flags, the existence of some really strong gender clinics for teenagers. I mean, we're moving from a lovely neighborhood in Houston that had an ocean of Trump signs. And whenever I put our Love is Love yard sign up, we got reported to the HOA and they made us take it down.
Homeowners Association?
Yes, yes. So to me, it's like, if we've got to move, let's get the things that we need. Let's be surrounded by the people that we need to love us. And why not? Let's get into hiking. So it's kind of a fun, that part of the decision was fun.
It was the first state to guarantee insurance coverage for gender affirming care, right?
That's right. That's right.
Katie and Noah left Houston behind over the summer, powered by a GoFundMe campaign. Katie's 5-year-old stayed back in Texas with his dad.
It was one of the hardest decisions of my life, and I still every day wonder how we're going to do this. Because, you know, as a mom, to leave one child, to take another child out of state, it hits you hard. It really does. It's brutal. It's brutal.
Some people might hear us talking and think, this is just one family's choice. And obviously a family with some privilege, if they can pick up and move.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like people are leaving in droves. I wonder what you'd say to them.
You'd be surprised. Of the families that I know personally, so have a personal relationship with, just from the Houston area alone, we know 5 other families that currently live in the general Denver area. 5 families have been forced to either completely pick up their lives or are living this fractured reality of half the family there, half the family here. And that's just me and my limited social circle in one city. It is much, much bigger. This flight, much, much bigger.
Today on the show, not every family can pick up and leave when their political leaders don't listen. But what happens when you do? I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com, from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking try free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
Katie's son Noah is 16 now, a high school junior. I got him on the line because I wanted to understand their big move from his perspective, most of all. I don't know many teenagers who would sign up for a move like this one, in the best of circumstances. And his circumstances were not that. So I asked him to start at the beginning. Noah says he's never felt quite right with his assigned gender, and that he didn't really have a big coming out process. He sort of eased into his new identity. And it started with a name change.
I started going by Noah in the seventh grade, actually, because my friends looked on a baby naming website because I was the youngest of the group. And I started telling my teachers that I was going by Noah, and I started writing on like homework and just schoolwork all around with that name. But my mom saw the name on some of my papers and just questioned it. And at first I was really, really scared. Obviously not that anything bad would happen, not that I'd get in trouble or anything, but I didn't want to take away their little daughter, their little girl.
At the time, you know, your mom notices you writing Noah on your schoolwork. Were you aware of the political conversation about being trans and trans kids?
The most that I really knew about it at the time was that people were talking about having an all-gender type bathroom. I distinctly remember me and my dad going into a Target and us talking about how they wanted to have all-gender bathrooms in a Target, but that a lot of people were like kind of freaked out by it, and I didn't understand that until much later, that it was kind of for sad reasons at times. So yeah, that was really all I understood. And I also sort of kind of understood that like people thought that coming out in 2018 was almost like a weird trend. Like, oh, you're seeing this online, you're seeing it everywhere. Like, so this is something that you want to do, but it was not.
So you were aware of people basically thinking what you were feeling was faddish.
Yeah.
How was school as you were beginning to transition? Was it fine? Like, was it when you started writing a different name at the top of your papers, were your teachers like, okay?
Yeah, they didn't really care. I mean, I'm always really thankful because I have pretty broad shoulders and I have thick eyebrows. So I was already pretty easily passing as male before I really even came out. I also always prefer to have shorter hair. And like whenever I told my teachers, they were like, yeah, not surprised, not surprised at all. And were totally okay with me changing my name up and like would take a note on their attendance sheets that this was the name that I was going by. Everyone knew me by said name.
He, him pronouns too?
Yeah, and he, him pronouns. And no one really cared. And it wasn't until, unfortunately, it wasn't until high school that I was terrified.
What was it about high school that made you terrified?
There was just more and more bills and like talking about bills coming out going against trans kids and just a lot of stuff with Child Protective Services that we were scared of. And like in schools, there's mandatory reporters all around. And unfortunately, I have kind of a bad past with SH and
with what?
Like self-harm.
Oh.
Yeah, so if they were to see that, think that something was going on at home and wanting to help for possibly the wrong intentions or the correct intentions, like it was just terrifying to be at school around people who could possibly take me away.
Did you ever feel that directly? Like you say you got scared in high school. I'm sure it was all different teachers, people who were just getting to know you. Was there a vibe shift?
I mean, yes and no. Hitting high school, like there were already kind of some weird issues that we were talking to about, like with my principal, about like, where can I go to use a bathroom? Like all this other stuff, because I was just personally scared of going to either the girl or the boy bathroom.
Because the girls felt wrong and the boys, you worried about being safe?
Yeah. And in the boys, I also was like scared that someone who already knew me and knew that I was trans would be like, no, you can't be in here because you don't have the correct part to be in here.
So what did your principal say when you said this is a concern of mine?
He told me I could use the nurse's bathroom and then basically everything else was unknown to him. And I don't think he still is knowing at all, which sucked.
Do you think he felt stuck in some way, like between what people above him were telling him and kids like you?
I don't know if he really cared.
Oof.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Governor Greg Abbott put this letter out instructing Child Protective Services to investigate families like yours?
I very, very, very much so remember that.
What was your reaction at the time? Like, how'd you hear about it?
Mom. Mom told me, and like, it was big hugs and just an awful, awful night when Greg Abbott sent out his letter. What, I came home with my partner and like, Mom was trying to keep it together, and like as soon as my partner Mazzy left, like I immediately asked my mom, like, hey, what's happening? What happened this time?
It sounds like you had already been worried about being in school. You knew that, you know, teachers might notice that you were in distress and possibly blame you and your family for it? Did it feel safe to go back to school with all the mandated reporters?
Last year in Texas, I skipped a lot of school. And there's this one particular corner down this long, long hallway that basically no one went down except the people who were skipping. And like, I get overwhelmed really easily, and I can get really dissociative, and basically everything just gets really loud, so I have to step out and like breathe or take a walk. So what I do is I go down into this hallway, into this corner, and I would just be on my laptop doing work. So I was still doing the work that I needed to do. Like that was more or less how I just kind of got out of it more than anything. I also took a lot of days off because I was just scared to be there and stressed out and very, very anxious to be around a bunch of people when this is on my mind, like all the time.
When did you start thinking about leaving Texas? Like, was it your idea or your mom's?
Oh, it was definitely mom's idea.
Were you enthusiastic? Like, I saw at some point you spoke to a reporter and you said leaving forever made you want to cry and curl up into a ball.
Yeah, still does. Huh. It's painful because that is everything. That is my entire family that I'm really close to. That is all my friends that I've ever met, ever seen.
You mean Texas is?
Yeah, in Texas. And that is also my partner of over 1 year. And that was the most painful and hard thing I've ever had to do, is to say goodbye and leave completely.
When we come back, life after Texas.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C., on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets. If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket. So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
How easy was it to adjust to Colorado, like new school, new kids? Did you know anyone?
No, I knew absolutely no one.
Did the school feel different when you walked in?
Oh, yeah, much different. First of all, I could have my preferred name on, like, my transcripts and stuff and on my ID. At my school in Texas, my preferred name was in quotations right next to my legal name. So no longer having to see that was amazing.
Has anyone ever questioned you about the trans stuff?
They've questioned me just about Texas stuff, about like how that was. Basically, most of the questions that you've asked me is like, how is coming out in Texas? It's funny, one of my good friends here moved from Florida recently, so we can share our war stories.
Are they trans too?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. In fact, on like the second or third day of school this year, I was super excited and I told my mom that there were three trans girls and like all my friends are trans. And like, I was super excited to tell her because that has never happened before. Like, it was just crazy to see like, oh my God, look at these other teenagers who are really close to age with me, like coming out as a girl when that is really hard, or coming out as a boy, which is also really hard.
You must have had friends back in Texas who needed to stay. Like, not everyone can move.
Oh yeah. My best friend, who's also trans and unfortunately does not have a family like mine, he has to stay, and moving has never been upon the subject or topic for them to be talking about, because they almost completely deny the fact that he even is trans, really.
How often are you in touch with your friend?
Not as much as I'd like. I mean, we're very much into like sending each other videos and memes or funny photos, but both of us can get into like really depressive states. So we kind of self-isolate, and I think currently, actually, unfortunately, he is in that area. So he's not really reached out all that much, and replies very shortly.
Does that scare you?
Yes. Sometimes it scares me because I think like, oh, his parents grounded him. And other times it's scary because like, I want him to be safe and I need him to be safe. So I don't know if he is safe or not when he doesn't respond.
Has he considered, I don't even know how to say this, but like detransitioning for safety, like saying like, okay, I guess in school I have to do X, Y, Z, even if that makes me feel wrong and dysphoric.
I'm sure he has considered it because I have considered it. But at some point you just kind of stop caring and like, you just can't help it anymore. And which is painful because you could get into trouble for wanting to be yourself somehow, which is still really stupid to me. But he just wants to be comfortable with himself, and the people who do accept him, make him happy and make him feel stronger. But then like, he just has to deal with the other people who don't accept him.
I wonder if you have like an alternate timeline in your head, a version of you that stayed in Texas, and whether you ever wonder about that person and how they're doing.
Actually, I've been kind of thinking about that topic a lot. I wouldn't say stayed in Texas, because I try to remind some specific family members that like, I am still the same person. But I mean, I think it's definitely just a huge part of my heart that has stayed with my family and just wanting to be there with them.
Do you think about going back?
Like forever or for visits?
Either, both.
Forever, I don't think will ever be a possibility again, because I don't think they'll change fast enough for it to be safe even when I'm in my 20s or 30s.
God, that's sad. You sound like when you hear stories of immigrants who left somewhere after a flood or a tragedy and they have to migrate, but they don't really want to.
I mean, that's what it feels like. It feels like, really, it feels like life or death, where we need to be able to run away. And that's kind of what we did, is we ran away as quickly as we could to be safe.
Yeah. Noah, I'm so glad that you've found a spot that's working for you. But I'm sad that you had to leave a place you loved to do it.
Yeah, me too.
All right, that's the show. What Next is produced by Elena Schwartz, Carmel Delshad, and Madeline Ducharme. We are getting a ton of support right now from Anna Phillips, Jared Downing, Victoria Dominguez, and Colton Salas. We are led by Alicia Montgomery and Joanne Levine. And I'm Mary Harris. You can go track me down on Twitter, say hello. I'm at Mary's desk. Yeah, I'm still there. All right. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you tomorrow.